sound.
Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone
500. Greatest album.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the SoundLogic Podcast. Today we are discussing album number 92, which is Axis Bold as Love by the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to radio station EXP. Tonight we are featuring an interview with
the Jimi Hendrix Experience released three albums as a group. All three of them are on this 500 list, and we've already done two of them. So this is, we're not even, they're all three of them are in the top 100. So this is the third of those three albums. Jimmy did one more album, I believe. I think he recorded it just before his passing, was Jimi Hendrix and the Band of Gypsies, or Band of Gypsies, I think was not with the Jimi Hendrix Experience, but the first three were, and here we are at the last one. Should we just dive into some details there, Ben?
Yeah.
Okay.
Details.
So this album was released December 1st, 1967. This was their second studio album. Our Experience was their first, and then Electric Ladyland was their third. All songs were written by Jimi Hendrix, except She's So Fine, written by bassist Noel Redding, and I believe he takes the lead vocal on that too, whereas Jimmy has all the other lead vocal on every other track. It charted quite well, went number 5 in the UK, number 3 in the US. I believe Are You Experienced it better in the UK, because that's where kind of where he started, and got kind of cut his teeth in there. In the UK. Sales, I certified 1 million in the US, 100,000 in the UK. I didn't see any other certifications, so we'll say at least over 1 million. It feels low, but I feel like this might not be quite as, the album might not be as popular as Are You Experienced. I mean, there's so many hits on that. And in fact, this this album, they only released one single. Up From the Skies, One Rainy Wish, the only single. And that's not even a song I'm very familiar with.
Yeah, it's fascinating, this album. If I had no internet connection and was trying to arrange the three albums in terms of when they came out, I would have assumed this one came before, partially for that reason, that there just isn't as much familiarity on this one.
Right, yeah.
As with Are You Experienced. Almost... there's a lot of experimental stuff here too, and it almost feels like a band trying to find their sound in a way. It's very clearly Jimi Hendrix. But Are You Experienced as a debut album feels so much more polished and put together, perhaps because of its familiarity, that I was somewhat surprised as I was journeying through this to find that, you know, just one single. And it still did quite well, as you said. I think it's certified platinum in the US and silver in the UK.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it certainly was popular enough. It's nothing to, no slouch to have those accomplishments, perhaps playing on the success of the first one.
Another interesting note, they finished recording their first album, Are You Experienced, in April of 67. And it came out in May. And then they started recording this album in May of the same year. And then so...
amazing.
Their first album came out in May, and this album is released in December. So, I mean, like that... it still just blows my mind. Even like even when we were kids, Ben, like in the 90s and the 2000s, you'd still only get an album every 3 or 4 years. Even today, if your favorite artist is even making albums and not just, you know, releasing songs, which you can do, it's still, you know, like 3-4 years. Like, can you imagine your favorite artist and you get a new album like every 9 months?
And like, they have it be good too. What? That's the other thing.
Like, I think
in high school, when the record company would push a band to get their sophomore album out, it often wasn't very good. And
a sophomore slump.
Sophomore slump. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, they had a very, I don't want to say strict or rigid, but consistent schedule of gigging and then going back to the studio and writing and gigging. Yeah. Like they did that. They just like, that's what they did. And I think so many bands, they had just this work ethic, or maybe some of it was, you know, fueled by different substances, which is, you know, whatever, it is what it is. But one way or the other, they were just working like crazy. I think now, you know, you get a lot more of the quote work is the touring, you know, the touring, right, the promoting, you know, doing the shows, doing the interviews, doing the music videos, doing the, you know, everything, you know, promoting is still a big deal. Back then, there really, you know, there weren't music videos, there weren't TikToks, there weren't YouTubes, there weren't any of that stuff. It was just write songs, record. Yeah, maybe do some interviews or TV shows, radio, but that's like in the morning, you know. If you've ever seen video of, you know, radio interviews, you know, you got the artist coffee in hand, sunglasses on from the gig and the party the night before, and you know, in the morning is the radio show or noontime, and then go get some rest and get ready for the gig in the evening, you know. that was it. Like that's what they did. Yep. And man, it was just wild. It's still just, we've talked about this, the incredible pace that music was being released in the late 60s by all artists, you know. It's not only, you know, especially the first iteration of this list was so heavily based in the late 60s, early 70s. It still has a lot of that, but comparatively, there was so much more music, so many more albums and good albums and popular albums, influential albums being released at that time. It's just, I don't need to beat a dead horse, but it just still, it just blows my mind. And it's not what you and I grew up with.
Right, right.
There was lots of music and there were artists that were working hard and doing lots, but just not at this rate, not anywhere near this rate. It's crazy. Right. A book we haven't talked about in a while, but a book that I have in 2000, it was voted number 147. In Colin Larkin's all-time top 1,000 albums. I've got that one. Jimi Hendrix has a number of credits on the album. It's kind of funny. Vocals, electric guitar, piano, recorder, glockenspiel on Little Wing, which is actually a really cool part of that song. I think it gives it some nice flavor. And the voice of Mr. Paul Caruso on EXP, which I think is the intro to the album. Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a, it's almost like a sketch, or like a little interview or something. It's kind of fun.
That's quite a rundown. Now I know they're, you know, a small band, so they're going to maybe be doing multiple different things. But when I saw that, I thought, wow, what a extensive thing for a guy who's known as just being a guitar god.
Right, yeah. But I mean, the other artists like Mitch Mitchell, drums, backing vocals, and the interviewer on EXP. Noel Redding, bass guitar, 4 and 8 string, backing vocals, foot stomping, and lead vocals on She's So Fine. So they're all you know, contributing in many different ways. And you get the sense that there was a lot of, I mean, Jimi Hendrix is, you know, kind of on a level himself, but there's a lot of creative fuel here, a lot of creativity between them. And I mean, you know, anybody who talks about the Jimi Hendrix experience, I think, knows how good the other players are. Right. I think people who aren't into the music, you know, it's just Jimi Hendrix, like this amazing guitarist who kind of turned the world of playing electric guitar just on its head, and it was changed forever. But I mean, you got to give credit to these other guys. I mean, they're so good. The drumming, both of them, like the drumming, you listen to the fills and all the little, you know, stutter hits between, ghost hits between the main beats. I've got it in my headphone right now, and it's just, it's so good. Bass playing, very creative, very melodic. Lots of walking around, very complimentary to Jimmy's playing. I mean, these guys are good, and I don't think they get. I think now maybe more than earlier, but they still don't get enough credit. for, I mean, it, and it's not easy to support a player like Jimmy. Like, how do you, what do you do? You know, when he's just like right out in the, you got to be good, but you got to, I mean, there has to be balance, right? If you try and compete with that, it's not going to be good. But you can't just play, you know, one node on the eights. You know, that's going to be kind of so.
I mean, that could have been an option. I think that would have been a way to, like, sort of highlight his guitar playing even more.
I guess so. But, I mean, it just.
But that's not the direction.
And it fits so well.
Yeah. One other piece here that I think is worth mentioning, and that's that this is when people start to realize that he might be pretty good at producing music and not just playing music.
Oh, okay.
I will say, strong recommendation. I think maybe we had this recommendation when we listened to Electric Ladyland. Get a good set of headphones and listen to this with, like, real intentional stereo sound.
Right, yeah.
Because the opening track starts swirling around you.
Right,
and
they play
a lot with left, right, with fade, with making the music do some pretty crazy things. And I think a lot of that is Jimmy. He was known as a perfectionist in the studio to the chagrin of his bandmates. Like, sometimes they were just like, come on, let's move on. We've got this. And he'd need to do more takes. But it turned out that perfectionism was also, I guess, empowered when he was behind the control knobs too. And you can hear it here. This is a really well mixed album. For three kind of virtuosos, it showcases them well, and you can tell there's, like, a production element that's also pretty genius too.
And you're right, because, you know, sometimes I'm listening out of crappy speakers, forget there's so much happening, and it's so much of it was new, and very experimental. We'll talk a bit more about that as we get into some of the music. Anything else before we move on to this album cover?
Ooh, it's a good one.
Please pause this podcast right now and Google the album cover to access Volt Is Love. man, like, before I even describe it, and hats off to Greg for complimenting my description of album covers, because I thought, oh, must be so ridiculous. But I don't know if I can do this one. But anyways, look this up, because this is, like, to me, the epitome of a psychedelic album cover. Like, this is if you said, what's a psychedelic album cover? Like, this is what it's supposed to look like. It's a drawing. This is hard to describe. There's, like, a sun at the top, and it's got the Jimi Hendrix experience, but it's written almost like in, you know, like it would be another alphabet or another language, like
it's
Hindu,
got almost an Arabic script to it. Yeah.
Arabic or Hindu or, because I believe the artist, the depictions are Hindu, I think. I'll get into that in a minute. But basically, you've got in the front, you've got Jimi Hendrix looking kind of in front of us with his hand up. He's got, like, henna designs on his hand. And beside him, he's facing forward. Mitch and Noel are facing left and right. And their hair, they've all kind of got the black kind of afro. But their hair almost is blending together, like, you can't tell where Jimmy's ends and the other ones start. And then you have all these figures, like, branching out, like, mirroring out from the side, and they've got all these, like, multiple hands, like you would see
Hindu gods, I guess.
Yeah, and then above them is, like, the cobra, like, one right above them, and then it spreads out, and this red and yellow sunbeam, almost like the old Japanese flag, but different colors. It's almost magenta and orange, really. Really psychedelic, really cool. And I'll read some of the here. The album cover depicts Hendrix and the experience as various forms of Vishnu, incorporating a painting of the musicians by Roger Law from a photo portrait by Carl Ferris. Melody Maker journalist Nick Jones described the artwork as a beautiful fold-out package that compensated for the very poor presentation of RU Experience. And we talked
yeah,
about that.
We did.
RU Experience was like just kind of these, you know, kind of blah photos.
Yeah.
One of them was a fisheye lens, which was kind of cool. The other one, I think, was the UK one or the European one, was kind of just weird font and just a kind of
dark
ho-hum picture of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought about this too. He likens the design to the cover image of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's, which had come out, I think, the same year.
Yeah.
I think it was earlier that year. He said it showed Hendrix with a lot of freaky-looking Indian cats and gods, sages, and one guy with an elephant's trunk for a nose or something.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Hendrix expressed dismay at the choice of cover art. He stated that the cover would have been more appropriate had it highlighted his Native American heritage. So he didn't even really approve of it. The painted image of the Experience was then superimposed on top of a copy of mass-produced religious poster. Hendrix commented, "The three of us have nothing to do with what's on the Axis cover." Huh. Unlike the previous album's cover art, both the UK and US editions featured the same image because they were different for RU Experience. Some Hindus have expressed anger over the use of religious images for the album's artwork. The Malaysian government's home ministry instituted a ban on the album's art in response to complaints. And I could totally understand that because it's not like this was a Hindu artist who did it or that they had any permission. So this is just what we would probably refer to as cultural appropriation at this point. So as much as I said, like, it's really cool to look at, and it kind of does, to me, sort of define and express the psychedelic era and kind of people expanding their experiences and
consciousness,
maybe not knowledge, but yeah, consciousness, that's for sure, but their experience of, like, well, let's check out Buddhism, let's check out Hinduism, let's check out you know, Islam and all these things, like, let's open our minds to everything, you know. That was certainly new, and certainly parts of it were positive, but maybe not the way they did this. All that to say, it's a pretty captivating image.
It is. I think it's so bright too. Like this choice of those bold, bright pastel colors, I think, just really makes it pop. And because there's so much going on there, similar to Sgt. Pepper's, I guess, it makes you want to, like, have a full size version in front of you so you can really inspect it closely and look at all the different elements and symbols and things like that. It's kind of a letdown that it was just adding their faces to something that already existed.
Right, yeah.
But it is a really neat piece of art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was this a double? No, this wasn't a double. This was a single. A lot of tracks, but a lot of them are short. It actually, total running time is only 38:49. So not even 39 minutes. So it's shorter, but a lot of tracks. Longest one is 5.5 minutes, Ben. So,
all right.
So nothing too epically long for you here, but
appreciate
a lot of them.
That, Jimmy.
Yeah,
thank you.
I know you like that. And though there was only one single, One Rainy Wish, there's a few other songs that have really become Jimi Hendrix staples from live performances and other people do them. Like, I think, like, Little Wing.
Yeah.
He's such a Jimi Hendrix blues classic, and I think Stevie Ray Vaughan, I think, who played a lot of Jimi and kind of had a, you know, he's often, there's arguments all the time of who was better, because his style really, I think, draws, and he was inspired by Jimi Hendrix playing style and kind of incorporated that into his style. He would often, I think Little Wing was one that he did quite often.
Yeah.
And then the other one I'm familiar with is Castles Made of Sand. I know at one point, I think I still have it, I had a greatest hits, you know, and that they were both on there. I'm not as familiar with the other ones. There's two that I am sort of familiar with for a different reason, but I'll come back to that. What about you? Was any of this familiar, Ben, or was it all new? Like, where did this? You had, I know you hadn't listened to the album,
right?
Totally before, and I hadn't either. But anything?
Little Wing for sure. I'm not sure if it would be this version or, like you said, Stevie Ray Vaughan. It sounds so much like Jimi Hendrix that. I found myself thinking, oh, have I heard this before? But I don't think so.
Right.
Flipping through the plays on Spotify, Castles Made of Sand might be another one that I've possibly heard. It's got 65 million listens, something like that.
Nothing
close to Little Wing. But so maybe. But really, most of this was a surprise to me. And it, really, that opening track that you mentioned, EXP... really has some 90s hip-hop segue vibes to it. And I was like, whoa, what? did I get the wrong album here? Opening with something just kind of random, playing with the stereo mix and voices. Yeah, it's an interesting blend of songs to be able to listen to this for the first time. Again, I mentioned this before, but this feels like more like a debut album, I think, than Are You Experienced did to me. And it's interesting that they use sort of the success or the radio airplay of that first album very quickly then to make something a bit more experimental, a little bit more edgy perhaps, and stuff that didn't necessarily track for generations in the way that Are You Experienced has.
Yeah, really interesting there.
Definitely a stepping stone to what comes next. I can see that too, in as much as I think this would have made more sense as a if it had been their debut. They really like take the experimentation on this album and crank it up to 11 on Electric Ladyland. So I can see the trajectory. It's just funny that the debut was so solidly good.
whether it's just your confidence or comfort level as an artist, or whether it's the producer saying, okay, we can't have that on your debut,
right?
Like, get established. Perhaps. That allows them then to do more of that, or once you hear Jimmy, and once you see that the public has accepted him as their new guitar god, then you say do what you want, like do whatever you want, and then and then that's exactly what he does on Electric Ladyland. It's definitely in the middle. Like, it's more experimental, I think, than Are You Experienced, but not nearly as experimental as Electric Ladyland.
Right.
I mentioned there's two songs that I was familiar with, but actually I heard them as covers first. And by the same...
one of them Bold as Love?
Yes.
Okay, that one also had some familiar vibes to it, but it definitely wasn't Jimmy's version. Is it John Mayer?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So in 2006, he released Continuum, which I think is his best album, and I think was possibly his most successful album. And he did a cover of Bold as Love on that, and it... I knew because I get albums and I was really into it. It's a great album. If you hear John Mayer and you kind of have a knee jerk reaction to, ugh, I don't like that guy, and you don't really know his music, check out Continuum. It's a really good album.
Yeah, it is.
Really, really good. It's more guitar based. It's his first studio album with Pino Palladino on bass and Steve Jordan on drums. And Steve Jordan has played with everybody on drums. What's the guitarist? There's a jazz guitarist. Now the name will come to me. But he's played with a lot. And Pino Palladino is a bassist who's played with everybody. He played Don Adele's albums and has toured with The Who, I think, ever since John Entwistle passed, for years. So, you know, you hear their influence and some of the kind of rock stuff. On this album. So that one. And then I believe just before Continuum came out, or just after, but I think it was before, John Mayer released an album at the John Mayer Trio, which was him and those two guys, which was a live album. I think it was before that. So he did his first two albums. He did some other artists were realizing that he was not just writing really good pop tunes, but he was like an amazing guitarist. So he starts playing with more and more, like, you know, just well-established blues. Like, he's playing with Buddy Guy, and he's playing with all these, like, blues people. Starts playing with these two guys, and they do a live album. And on that live album, they do Wait Until Tomorrow. And that was the first time I had heard that song. And it wasn't until I had had it for a while that I looked, like, you know, I was reading the liner notes again and said, oh, that's a Jimi Hendrix song. So Wait Until Tomorrow and Bullet Is Love, the first time I heard them, were by John Mayer.
Wait Until Tomorrow's a funky little track.
It's really cool. It's a lot of fun. It's really fun. And yeah, the live version with the John Mayer Trio is really good as well. And I believe so after Continuum, John Mayer did a DVD special. I think it's called Where the Light Is. It's a concert he did in LA, and it's set up in three parts. He does an acoustic solo set.
Okay.
Then he does a trio set, and then he does a band set. So the trio set, I think they do both those tunes in the trio set on that DVD. Yeah, it's good. Anyways.
Wow. We spent way more time talking about John Mayer tonight than I thought we would.
Well, I mean...
guitars.
Yes, guitars, but I mean, he took a lot of influence. Like, he plays a Fender Strat. You know, he plays a similar style a lot of times, not all the time, but kind of makes sense. And that's another artist that I've kind of followed his career, and I think I have pretty much, except for maybe his most recent, I have all his albums too. So that's kind of my familiarity with it. I enjoyed it. I think the one criticism I would have, and I think Little Wing is a good example, is Little Wing is 2 minutes and 24 seconds long. And I feel like some of the songs, they start and you start to get into them and you might have a verse and a chorus and then they're over.
That's a problem?
Yeah, but like, you know, I mean, we recently talked about Gordon Lightfoot, you know, may he rest in peace, and the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and you were kind of lamenting, and other people have, on how many verses it is. I mean, I personally love it. I love the story. I mean, it tells a story, and I think it's great. It is a lot of verses, but it's at least a narrative. But I mean, Little Wing, for example, like, it's a great tune. You know, once you get going, like, I could do another verse and chorus at least. Mm-hmm. You know, like, surely, Ben, you would allow that to be a 4 minute song. Even to your standard, Little Wing could be a 4 minute. You know, so that was my one complaint. There's other songs where it's like, I feel like they just get going, and then they're done, you know.
Well, especially for an album that's only 39 minutes, like, they had a bit more space. They could have ran out the clock on a couple of these.
So, I mean, it's when I'm trying to be really careful when I'm talking about someone else's art. If it's complete and you're like, hey, that's it. Like, that's what I want. You know, I've expressed what I want to express, musically, lyrically, whatever. Or maybe they just didn't have another verse. I don't know. But so I certainly don't want to criticize that. It's just kind of like, but I like it. Make it longer. Or they could do like a Captain Beefheart, and if you have another verse of lyrics but not music, the music just stops and you just keep speaking.
That's right. It's hard to know exactly why the length of the tracks was the way that it is. There's a couple notes about Jimmy demoing some of these songs just very briefly, and then heading into the recording studio. With that quick of a turnaround from Are You Experienced to this album, it's not like they had a couple of years of writing that they're bringing into the studio with them. So it may just be that these are like things that didn't have enough time to get much bigger or longer.
Maybe.
It's just a quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. It's also fascinating to me, like, these songs almost, like a jazz album, kind of showcase the talent of the musicians in some really intense ways. It almost makes me wonder, like, could they keep it up and keep playing some of these tracks because of how much is going on with the instrumentation.
Yeah, that's true.
They're not a jam band. they're really exploding with their music. And I don't know. We could come up with lots of no credential reasons for this, but I didn't find myself longing for more. And I don't know if it's because the songs weren't terribly familiar to me. I think if I spend a bit more time with this album, I might get to that point of realizing, oh wow, that song's over already. I think I was more concerned about getting through all 13 tracks and getting a taste for what was on this album. Perhaps because you've got a bit more experience with it, that stood out to you a bit more. I'll have to report back maybe when we get to our next re-rank episode.
Sure. We should take a minute to pick our favorite tracks to put on our Spotify playlist. Check out SoundLogic Favorites on Spotify. We picked two tracks from each album we review. Ben, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Oh, wow. Ready to go.
You're going to chuckle because it's the shortest song on the album at 1 minute 48 seconds long. Ain't No Tellin' is my favorite. There's something about the way that the band comes in that actually reminds me of a jam band, the North Mississippi All-Stars.
Oh, I love them. Oh my gosh, I was listening to them the other day.
The pace of their play and the sort of really tight way that all the instruments move together. When that song came on, I was like, whoa, this is catching my ear. And not necessarily because of the reasons Jimmy's music normally does, but that one hooked me right away. It's kind of funny. It's not one that I expected. It's got, one of the lower play numbers of any of the tracks on the album, but I really like it.
Good choice, man. That is a lot of fun. That's a fun song. This is hard. Honorable mention to Little Wing, of course, to Castles Made of Sand. Lots of fun. I'm going to go with, I guess, what we'd call the title track, Bold as Love.
All right.
It's one that I'm familiar with because of John Mayer. It's a lot of fun. I love the imagery in the lyrics. Like, I don't think we often think of Jimi Hendrix as a gifted lyricist. I think he is, but I don't think that's what we often credit him for. It's always the guitar, right? Yes. And not even his vocal. And I think his vocal's very good too. But I love the personification of emotions as colors. It's really, really clever. It's a lot of fun. And has a lot of fond memories for me too. It was cool for me to listen to it backwards to hear this one years later and go, here's the original, and to hear the differences, and hear kind of what John Mayer's done with it, and hear kind of how Jimmy had initially intended it. It's a great tune. It's a fun tune. Sometimes artists will put like a single or a lead single or a title track as the last track on the album. I always find that as a really interesting choice. Whether that's their choice or the engineer, the producer, the label has done that when they're putting it together. But like, this is a good song. Like, it's not just a filler song. So interesting that you put it at the end. Anyways, that's my choice.
Good choice.
So what has aged well, if anything, and what hasn't, if anything?
Well, he's a guitar god. He's a virtuoso. He does things with the electric guitar that I think most guitarists are still trying to wrap their head around. And for that reason, I think it's almost timeless.
Yeah, I would say so.
The production, like I mentioned before, is really, really well done for an album in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't feel all that dated to me. The cover actually might be the thing that really screams 60s psychedelia in a way that the album, the album is experimental, but it doesn't... it doesn't sound as psychedelic as some other music that's out there, for sure. It sounds like Jimmy.
Yeah.
And he has a unique voice and a unique talent. So I think this actually has stood up quite well. What about you?
Well, first of all, I would agree with... I really want to reiterate some of those things. The guitar part, yeah, like... People are still really good guitarists can do this, but most people can't emulate this, and it's still something that if you pull out a Jimmy-esque riff in almost any genre of rock, like you can make it work, and people are going to be okay with it. So that's fine. Production value is quite good for a sophomore album in '67. It's good. I totally agree with the cover art as being, dated and quite insensitive.
So that's
a little problematic. I think the sketch, sets it very clearly in the 60s. The intro.
I didn't even think about that.
And and with the kind of the playing with the vocal and that kind of effect, it sounds like, different effects they used in movies and very psychedelic feel. So that, I don't think is aged great and certainly is very, telling of when it is. That's not necessarily bad. You hear a bit of, I think you call it a flange, like where you kind of play with the, you squeeze and pull the,
mm-hmm.
Like that phaser sound on the whole mix or on the guitar. You don't hear that don't hear that as much anymore. That's aged a bit, but other than that, man, it's pretty good. Like the like I said, the bass playing is great, the drumming is great, even the experimental parts are like fit well with the time. They're not out of sync with what was happening then. So if you put a lot of this on the radio now, I think it might be a little out of place, but I think that it certainly still very much has a place in any rock music or any guitar based music. This could still be drawn upon as influence. You could put this on and say, okay, let's pull this pieces to make this. I think it's in general aged quite well.
Agreed.
What else to say? I guess we'd have to ask somebody who's younger. This is number 92. This is the third of their three albums.
Right.
It's dropped 10 or 9 spots, depending on which version. All of their albums have gone down, except Electric Ladyland went up 2 spots.
2 spots. I'd say they're fairly consistent, given how much other stuff of their contemporaries has moved around.
Moved around, either gone way down or switched spots. These have they've stayed in the same order.
Yeah.
And Are You Experience went from 15 to 30, which I think is fine. I don't know.
It seems to me like this is the correct order if they're all going to be on this list. And it's really hard to argue with them not being a part of this. They definitely should be a part of this list, I guess, based purely on Jimmy's lasting legacy. I don't think this one is as great as the other two, and it surprises me that it's as high, frankly, that it's in the top 100. It's a little bit surprising to me. I would be surprised if it continues to hang out here, although I don't know. You know, people are still playing guitar and still wanting to be this good. So, and perhaps because of the tragic length of his life too.
Yeah,
such a finite amount of his music, people will continue to return to it. This isn't like Gordon Lightfoot, who we've mentioned before, with 20 studio albums. These are the three. That's what you've got.
Yeah.
So,
no, absolutely. I think I like this one a little bit more than Electric Ladyland.
Okay.
I think there's... I don't know if I need all three of these albums in the top 100 even. Are You Experienced? I think should be where it is. Could be even a little higher, I think. The other two, obviously they're significant. Obviously Jimi Hendrix and the band, very significant. I think... You know, Electric Ladyland has Voodoo Child and Crosstown Traffic, so those are pretty big hits, but, you know, this has Little Wing and Castamere Sand, so there's, like, I just found it, in general, a little easier to listen to, but maybe the experimental nature of Electric Ladyland just made it more influential. I'm not sure. I'd be okay with flopping these two.
Okay.
Or even having them both out of the top 100. Again, not. It's like what we talked before. Are you? Is it here because? Is it here because they're really great albums and they're influential and this many people said they're significant to them, or is it here because Jimi Hendrix was Jimi Hendrix and we want to represent him? You know, we want to have all his albums represented here.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, if there is one. Or if it's like, no, it was just the voting, which I still don't really believe. I'm fine with it here, but I don't think it needs to be this high. And if anything, I think Electric Ladyland should be lower. But
okay.
That's my two cents that nobody asked for. I guess if you push play in the podcast, you kind of ask for it.
This is the point where we usually talk about if there's any other albums. The answer is no. You probably got a sense of that already. You did have one more album, as Mike was referencing earlier. But these are the three that are on this list, and that's it.
He did one more album. Pretty sure he did one more album.
It is a live album. Yep.
Is it a live album? Okay, so
but
he
without
did...
the original group.
Yeah, that's right. And I think was like... It is Jimi Hendrix.
Yes.
Like, it's not the Hendrix, it's Jimi Hendrix Experience. So, yeah. No, this is it. This is the last one, but we did all of them.
Yeah.
Is this the first artist that who's done, like, more than one album that we've done all of them?
We've completed the canon. That's a good question.
I think
question.
It is.
I think you're probably right.
Like, the only other one I can think of, I guess, is Lauryn Hill, but she only did one, so I don't even know if that counts. One solo.
The band have two, and we've done them both.
You're saying the band only have two albums?
On this list.
I see
what you mean.
I mean, we've completed every album. Oh, I guess.
Yeah.
They only have two on the list?
Yeah.
I guess you're not counting the Basement Tapes. Is that even on the list?
It is on the list still. So you're right. There's one more.
Does that count? I guess it's the band and
Bob Dylan and the band.
Yeah. I guess what I meant was, you know, a whole catalog of an artist, and we've done them all. But I don't know if any other artists, if all of them are on. Maybe the Beatles, but we haven't.
Velvet Underground. Isn't that another one that, like, they only have a few and they're all here?
Maybe.
There's four on the list. I don't know if that's their entire canon, but.
Well, anyways, this is the first that we've done all of them if they've had more than one and they're all here. So
yeah.
Kind of interesting, but. Anyways,
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed our review of Axis Bold as Love. I hope we didn't ramble too much for you. Hope I didn't talk about John Mayer too much for some of you. Maybe I have. That's okay. Ben, we're going to switch genres a bit for our next one. Yeah, we're doing this a lot. But tell us what we have. tell us what we got coming up next week.
Coming in at number 93 on the top 500 album list is Supa Dupa Fly by Missy Misdemeanor Elliott.
A total genre switch, and I'm really looking forward to discussing that with you, Ben, to something a little bit out of our element, but something certainly from a time when we were growing up. So that'll be fun to reflect on that. Until that time, we hope you continue to be well. We hope you take care of yourselves and those close to you. And certainly we hope you'll join us again right here on the Sound Logic Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.